Hello everyone, I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 36 of the Art Scene Podcast. Before I introduce my guest today, I wanted to plug a couple things happening right now in the Bay Area. The first is a new exhibition at Soma Arts in San Francisco titled Forever a Moment, Black Meditations on Time and Space. It is a multidisciplinary community art exhibition that explores Black identity and the way it experiences, interprets, distorts, and transforms time and space. On a cool side note, among the many talented artists featured in the show is former guest of the podcast, Musée Cissé. The show runs till April 6th, and for more details, visit www.somaarts.org. Speaking of former guests of the podcast, Marcela Pardo Arisa has curated a new exhibition at Southern Exposure titled The Tallest Part of the Arch. In reference to the keystone, the final stone during the construction of an arch, the piece that holds all the stones together, the various artists and writers in the show use their role as keystones in our social structure to call on us to build more thoughtful, empathetic, and collaborative arches together. The show runs till March 30th, and for more info, visit www.sox.org. Since this weekend is the Oscars, I figured it would be really cool to talk to somebody who is interested in films. So my guest today is Omar Lopez, a local San Diego artist and filmmaker. Already a respected video artist who has had shows at the San Diego Art Institute and the Oceanside Museum of Art, Omar has recently decided to pursue filmmaking full-time. He is currently working on his first feature film titled Anna, Who They Pulled Out of the River. Here's our conversation where you hear him talk not only about his filmmaking process, but also his introduction to the art world. But I actually first heard of you, you came recommended from Noé Olivas, who I've actually had on the podcast before.
Yeah, and San Diego.
Yeah, another San Diego, local San Diegan artist, who's now at USC, I think, right now. Again,
is in LA, yeah.
In LA. And but he kept telling me, like, you have to talk to Omar. He's like,
I paid him to say that.
And yeah, I mean, every time I message him, he goes, you got to talk to Omar. I was like, all right. But now I have you here. I have you in the Bay Area, which is great. Like, I didn't have to go down to San Diego, which, you know, that's the hardest part.
It
would have
been worth it.
I would, no. And you know, and San Diego is my hometown, so like I love like heading back there whenever I can. But yeah, so one of the things I always start with all my guests is asking them where they're originally from, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, San Diego. I was born in San Diego.
Yeah, and what neighborhood you grew up in?
I bounced around between you know, Imperial Beach, Chula Vista, mm-hmm. Very glamorous.
Yeah.
back and forth, really, IB and Chula Vista. And then after high school, just sort of bounced around all over town.
What high school did you end up going to?
Hilltop.
Yeah. Where were you? The Lancers, right?
The Lancers, yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in Oceanside, which is the northern part of San Diego County, the suburbs.
Yeah.
But I grew up in Oceanside, and I went to El Camino High School, where the Wildcats.
Oh, okay.
And so how long – so you've been there the whole time, even still in San Diego.
Yep. Never left. It's so great.
And tell me, when you were growing up, you know, were you always interested in – and wanting to be an artist or be in the arts in some way or another? Is this something that came later on?
No, I think I was like a really shitty artist, like, especially like, I think my earliest memory of like trying to draw.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was a really good artist.
Yeah.
And you know, like sketch, when you see sketching, you see people like do like little marks, like,
Oh yeah. Like that. Yeah. They can't do the straight line yet.
Yeah.
But they're
sketching and there's, you know, they're going light. I remember I tried to draw a dinosaur like that, but they were really dark, and it just looked. I showed it to my friend, and he said, "I said, what do you think?" And I thought, like, I had like learned how to sketch or something. It's like a hairy dinosaur. I wasn't a good artist, but I liked movies a lot. But yeah. Even that didn't hit until like a lot later.
And so, through high school, or like, what are you doing through high school for the most part? Like, in terms of.
Oh, I think I was like the romantic kind of ideas, of, like, I wanted to write.
Really?
Yeah, like since that, I think that's what I did. Since
really?
I was little, yeah.
What would you write?
Just little stories, or like you see things.
Yeah.
And like, what do you call that? Observational.
Oh, really?
Whatever. Yeah. Lots of like real high school stuff. You know? Poems and all that stuff.
Were you influenced by anybody in your family on the side of it? Like, was anybody in your family kind of artistic or loved to write? Is this something that on your own you were kind of good at, like?
No, but I think there's a lot of like, what would you call it? Like do it yourself sort of stuff. You know, I guess it wasn't artistic, but did a lot of crafts. So there's a lot of like hot gluing, a lot of sewing, hot gluing of stuff. And then a lot of my family, they had their own like businesses or would start things up.
Yeah.
I think that stuck on me. Like I would start a business. I did that a lot too, like, since I was like in elementary school. Start a business for like 2 weeks and then get tired and then do something else. And then start another business. And I'd really get into it, like doing the whole, like you think of the name and then the sort of graphic design. I didn't know it was called graphic design, but you know, like colors and what's it called, like all that stuff. I'd get into that. I did a lot of that.
What kind of businesses were your family like?
Selling jewelry. Mm-hmm. I found out later, like loan shark, but like not like the mean kind.
Right,
not
the that break your leg kind.
Yeah. Yeah, my grandma, I grew up with my grandma a lot, and we'd go to TJ like 3-4 times a week. And I didn't really know what she did. I wanted to do it though, because we just like, what I understood was we show up at different people's houses.
Yeah.
And we drink coffee or eat or whatever. And they'd give her money and then we'd leave. And then I thought, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. What did she do that for?
I don't know. I mean, I stopped going with her so much once I got like later in elementary school. But I don't know, bad with years, maybe up to like 20 years ago, maybe something.
Wow. So you mentioned going back and forth to TJ a lot. So like, so you have family, and when we say TJ, it's for all the listeners who don't know, it's Tijuana.
Yeah.
But do you still go or still have family there?
Yeah, I don't see a lot of family there because a lot of them have moved over. But I just go over all the time just to shoot,
yeah,
work and stuff. Oh, yeah. So my family... they are all, I mean, you're from San Diego. I don't know if you have family over there.
I do. But
the dream is always come to San Diego, come to a nice part of San Diego or come to California or somewhere. And
yeah.
And I'm like, you know, who wants to go back? And I'm like, I like the stuff over there.
Well, okay.
It's stupid.
So when you finished up high school, right, what was the next thing you did?
So I didn't go to school because I had like this romantic notion that I was going to not go to college and write and travel and work.
Did you ever do those things?
Yeah, I did. But I kind of regret not going to college because I could have done that other stuff too.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I just traveled, wrote, worked. Like, you know, like everyone, you live in shitty apartments. And
yeah. Where did you travel to?
Crappy jobs. Europe, Spain, France, Morocco. A lot of up and down California a lot. Like growing up in San Diego, I'd never really traveled a lot.
Well, and how many years did you do that for?
I don't know. It wasn't like a period in my life, like my travel years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It was just like sporadic.
Yeah,
like...
I was just working all the time and then like leaving whenever I could. And I think the thing that I did most of that time was writing. Writing. Yeah.
And, you know, so I looked through your website, right? And I looked at some of your work and... You know, you've done some pretty interesting work. I mean, you worked with tintype photographs. You do like short art films. And so when did that become an interest for you? Like, how did it, like, you know, you mentioned at first you kind of had this romantic idea of being a writer and you traveled. So when did the idea of being an artist, like a visual artist and working with photography and film, when did that kick in?
I mean, I think I tried a little bit in high school. I went to Southwestern College.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Community college.
Yeah.
I tried painting, and then I learned really quick, like, I wasn't any good at painting, and it was going to take me, like, 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And then I said, no, I'll keep writing. So I would try things, and then, you know, at least I had that, I think, that I didn't, like, think my stuff was good when it wasn't, you know,
yeah.
Like I was sort of realistic and said, no, it's going to take like 5 years,
yeah,
or 10 years and I just keep writing. So I sort of always was doing something.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how I got into it. I think I was always just like, you know, I would pick up stuff really easily and I'd get really into it and then drop it in like 6 months.
Yeah.
And then I think that's how like I sort of always kept a foot in sort of making art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I think photos, I've always taken photos, and then from photos to movies,
yeah,
short weird films. And then one day I just thought like, why don't I just make movies? Because it's really what I've always been interested in. It's been like since like I was a little kid.
And it combines writing as well.
Yeah, well then I figured out too, like, you know, the thing about like art was that I was always making disparate sort of different things. There wasn't any like cohesion.
Yeah.
Like you could look at the little stupid things I'd make and you would never know that they were the same person. Like they didn't have a thing. Because I always wanted to do something new. And then I figured out with movies, like that's like the cure. Like you get to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, you can write it, depending on what you write, you design everything, the scene,
yeah,
people, costumes, you work with whatever. And then when you want to do something new, then you just write something new. And it's great. You get to do everything.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I do see that. And in the word, one of the series was called that you did in 10 types Relampago.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because you're working with people. It did feel like, it felt like still shots from a movie, yeah, right? Like I could see that you were like, you're trying to like show some sort of story or whatever to the images because you're posing with people in some of these images that people that you've met, it seems like, right? Like,
no, they're all strangers. That was the thing because I thought I tried it, you know, I tried it a bunch of times before and then it was like with people and you could always tell that it was posed.
Yeah,
it didn't look anything. And then I tried with like absolute total strangers.
Yeah,
and like I'd park places like you know in Hollywood, like where you could see the Hollywood sign.
Yeah,
I was just trying to get foot traffic. And I was like, I'll just get, you know, people here, and I would like, you know, pull aside like Japanese tourists and different people and like, get them to do it. And that didn't work either. It looked weird. It was, you know, they were strangers,
right?
But it was done in like a real rush.
Yeah,
and then I figured out okay, strangers. But sort of, but contact them beforehand. So either through people that I know, I did a lot of Craigslist ads. And then so I'd tell them like, we need at least like 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
And then so you'd get that like stranger person I've never met before. And there's like a little bit of like electricity, sort of energy. But then also I get like 3-4 hours to do it. So we can, you know, there's a lot of hit or miss. So figure do it until something sticks.
So when you start getting into basically in the practice of making artwork, whether it was through photographs or through film, what was kind of like your break? Because I mean, I was looking at your CV and you've shown at a lot of places down there and San Diego, you showed the Museum of Contemporary Art, I think at SDMA too, right? At one point,
The Summer Salon.
Yeah. And I mean, you've shown a few places. So like when did that start happening where you're trying different things like with photography and film, and then all of a sudden it actually became like a thing where like, oh no, I'm an artist. Like, I guess what I'm asking is, when did you decide I'm an artist?
Start saying, I was like bullshitting that since like a long time ago. Yeah, I'm an artist. What do you do? I'm a writer. But break? I've gotten to show.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know if I've had a break. I want a break. I would like to have the break.
How do they ever hear of you? Like, were you showing in smaller gallery spaces or did you submit your work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, San Diego, it's pretty small.
Yeah.
And it was just like that. You do one thing and then the other thing, boom, boom. It's just kind of been like a trudge, I think. I don't know. I don't want to talk for everyone else in San Diego, but I think if that's what everybody does.
Yeah.
You know, you show around San Diego and then you get like a blip, then you get like an LA thing, and a blip, blip, like a little.
Yeah.
LA, San Francisco or somewhere else, or I don't know if you're in graduate school. But I think it's just the same as everyone, just sort of, you know, bopping along all the little places and just doing it and doing it.
And, you know, we've mentioned your photographic work. When did you decide film was the better? I mean, you know, I know ultimately you're making like a full-on movie. A full-on feature movie. And but you still do, as in addition, but you made this transition from photography to smaller films or just like art films, basically.
Yeah.
But they're shorter. When did that transition happen?
I think that was after the 10 types.
Yeah.
Or sort of maybe even during the 10 types. Because I wanted to, yeah, because it was during the tin types, and like you get your hands real dirty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, you know, hands-on process, and then I like that, and then you know, you fall into like a Google hole, and I learned, you know, I saw some like image that I liked, and it was like a Super 8 thing. I thought, oh, I want to do like Super 8 stuff. And,
yeah.
And I started doing that, and then that was sort of. I guess that was sort of like film school.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I remember there were dudes in high school. There was like little cliques that they used to make shitty movies. You know, like you hear like directors like, yeah, I was making these really stupid movies in high school. Like, yeah, you know, and it's where I learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like they were doing that. And I remember them doing that. And it never appealed to me when it should have. I don't know. But, yeah, from tin types to Super 8, and that was, you know, I was like 15 years late, but that was my, you know, fucking around and learning and doing a lot of mistakes, filmmaking, film school,
yeah,
self-taught film school, yeah, and then I think it was that, and then I realized I think that I wanted to stick with movies when so you know, like say you're making a piece or it's time to install or do something. And then all this stuff goes wrong and, you know, you have to put all this money into it, whatever. But it always happens. At least it always happened with me when I was like making something.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're not like a big name artist, like that money's coming out of your pocket.
Yeah.
And then you're doing it and you're going like, why is this worth it? All right, here we go. And it's doing that. And then when I was working on my first like film stuff, like I had no problem. Like I had no reservation, like it didn't feel like a drag. Like I just thought like, oh, that sucks, gotta do it over again, here's much money.
Yeah
And like it's just like realizing like, oh, this is something that like I really want to put everything into, and I don't get that like hesitation. Like, you know, you do a lot of like you know, I installed a lot of my own shows, and when you're doing that you're thinking like, God, is this even worth it? You know, at least I did. Maybe, you know what, maybe you know, lots of other artists would, no, I never think.
Well,
but I did.
Well, so then, like, you know, you mentioned the cost of it, right? Yeah. Like the struggle of how do you keep going, right? And funding what you want to do. This whole time that you're like making art and hanging out in San Diego, like, what are you doing for a living?
Yeah, just a lot of install work for museums.
Yeah. So you were still in that. So you were like in the art scene in some way or another, whether it was through working for museums or doing install work for them or something.
Yeah,
it was
mostly like fabricating and nailing and hanging. Really, yeah. Like glamorous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did that for a long time. A lot of odd jobs, like handyman and stuff. I collected seed. I was a seed collector for a while.
Oh, really?
Native. I got a gig with like a habitat restoration company, and that was pretty cool. Just go out on a 4x4 and collect seeds and plants all day,
and
fill the truck and come back.
That's interesting. And what would that tell me? Like, this is new to me. I'd never even heard of this. Like, so what was the whole purpose of this?
It's like for big and small habitat restoration projects. So, like say you're making like some sort of big development in San Diego. I don't know what the law is, but like for X amount of acres that you develop, you have to also restore or rehabilitate X amount of land. And then also just for like smaller, a lot of like city, state jobs, like restoring habitats. So you go and you have like a list, like we need like 10 pounds of this, 20 pounds of this, 5 pounds of this.
Yeah.
And then you go and like the little flowers are so hard because you can't see that when they're seeding, that they, everything just looks like brown. It's dead. So you go like months before and you find the flowers, and then like you pop in like the GPS to remember later. And then you come back like months later.
Yeah.
And you try to, you scrounge around on the floor to try to find these little,
wow,
the plants, and then you steal their seeds.
That's interesting. Okay. So now you decide that short films, and, you know, you're ready to, like, what, when you're doing these short films, I guess let me start with there. When you're doing these short films, what is the subject of your films? Like, what are you interested in filming and showing to people?
I didn't figure it out until later, but then a friend pointed it out. And he said, like, oh, well, all your stuff is always, like, to do with women.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but not in, like, a...
Right, not like,
not like
a
Fellini
weird,
way. Or like it's just, I realize, I think it's because like all like the, how do I put this? Like I love like Indiana Jones is like,
yeah,
you know, if you're a kid of my, you know, if you're my age, like Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park, Rambo, all those things. I love those things, but I don't feel like I want to do, like if I did that, I would feel stupid. Like if I made, you know, my version of Rambo, you know, if I made my hero guy, I don't know, I'd feel kind of embarrassed or stupid. I don't know. It's just not interesting.
Yeah.
But I'll still go watch stuff like sure. now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, and I love it, but it's more interesting to me. I don't know. I don't really think about it. I don't think like, all right, I want to do this. It has to be about women. Okay, so how do I do this? No, like, it just yeah. start, and it happened to be that.
It like comes out naturally. Like, it's just whatever. It's what you, what comes out when you are.
Yeah, and it's just more like appealing to me, and not in a like, you know, not in a like feminist like women. It's time to put some heroines on the screen, but it's just more interesting. I don't, yeah. You know.
And so, you know, the what? Give me an example of a film that you did that like a short film that. Got shown somewhere at a museum, like
I haven't shown a lot. Like I would, no, but I like show them more. Yeah,
yeah, but when you were, yeah, when you were showing,
like my first, so the very first Super 8 thing I did, I never finished. Then the second thing I did was in 16, and that was called Sin Eater, and I showed that a couple places, but not a lot. That was about two sisters in the Great Depression era. Kind of like living in the woods, and I got fascinated by, I think the first time I saw it was like in an episode of X-Files. Did you see that one where like the Indian eats people who are sick, and then he,
you know, I never, sadly,
yeah,
I missed it by like 2 years probably.
Oh, X-Files, yeah,
you know, where like I wasn't old enough to see it, right? And then by the time it ended. Yeah, yeah, it was like the last couple seasons of it.
It was like an X-Files thing, and then from there, just again, you know, Google hole. And it was basically about sin eating, which is a practice of like it goes like way back to like the Jewish tradition of like a scapegoat sort of. But it's basically a Scots-Irish tradition. If you died without your last rites,
yeah,
like you got kicked in the head by a horse or something,
mm-hmm.
You could pay like this like village outcast person to come. They come during your wake, and you have like a piece of bread and a beer over the body. And they eat the bread and drink the sort of like the communion sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
They eat the bread, they drink the beer, and they say this short little prayer, and they take on all of your sins.
Yeah.
And that's like their job.
Wow.
And then, so I like that idea. And then I just built a story, I guess, around that.
So now you're ready. About a year ago, I learned about that feature film that you're working on right now.
Yeah.
What finally did it for you where you're like, I'm going to make a full-on movie. Enough of the short stuff, enough of photography. I just want to write my own story and then do a full-on film.
I don't know. I think I'd wanted, I mean, if I had the means, I probably would have tried to do a feature from like the beginning, which might have been stupid, but I would have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was just like that. I'm like, what am I now? I'm 34, so I'm yeah. like 30, whatever.
Yeah.
And you just feel like you're way behind. There's not really time for like baby steps anymore.
Yeah.
So you sort of just kind of like, gotta make something big. Gotta stick.
Well, I mean, I look back at your photos. I look back at the shorter films that you did and that you have on your website and stuff. And it's funny because it looks like for years you were kind of building your, taking those baby steps. Like, I mean, I could see yeah. the cinema, like your like thirst for like wanting to like show some form of a story. In an image, in some way or another.
Yeah, and then I think it's like, so like that was the alligator in Peter Pan. You yeah. know, what, after all these baby steps, you're like, yeah, I should probably like do something big, or else it's just gonna be baby steps.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. How did it start? I think originally, like, it was an idea. I wanted to do like the Jungle Book, but in Tijuana with female. Lead instead of like a guy for Mowgli. The story started like that, and then just like then I wrote sort of like the basic script, and then it just changed, worked on it for like a year. And it was just sort of like snowballed into what it is now. Yeah. It's not the Jungle Book anymore. It's more like, I'd say more like the story of Moses combined with that like traditional motif of like trying to get rid of something, but it comes back. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't do my research, whatever that motif is called.
Well, you know, so you even created a studio, like a production company, but yeah. It's called Standard Fantastic Studios. Was that, did you create that in because you were now going to be making this feature film, or was that something that already was like, it already existed?
Yeah. I'm just gonna give all the secrets away. It's like, yeah, basically it's just bullshitting my way through. It's a couple things. It goes back to like when I was a kid too. And I loved like when I was doing a new project, giving it a name, giving it a look, like doing all this stuff. Like in high school, I made skateboards and like, you know, I made skateboards, but I mean like half the time, I did that maybe half of the time. Then the other half was just like, you know, designing the logo.
The logo for this company that was going to be
pricing skateboard. Things out. How much is this going to be? I do this, if I do that.
Yeah.
All that stuff. So the Stand Fantastic came around was like, well, one of the sort of like legitimize things, not for myself, but more for people, you know? Like,
yeah.
You need an image. An image, kid.
Right. Can't just be some random guy. You have to like make it look like you're from some company.
Yeah, so I've done some like you know, straight just like promo and thing videos for like nonprofits and stuff.
Yeah,
but mostly it's like for my movies. And then you know what it was I saw an interview with John Waters.
Yeah,
and he was trying to get some cash, or he was trying to get some people behind. I forget what it was. You know, so same thing, legitimize himself, and he's like, yeah, I just called it. I think his was, is it Paradise or Fantasy? No, that's Almodóvar's like Fantasy. I think it's like Paradise or something like that. Fantasy, something like, whatever John Waters is.
Yeah.
Again, sounds stupid, but forget it. That idea though of like, yeah, I'll just call myself that. And now I'm not John Waters. Now I'm this guy.
Well, all right. So let's talk about this movie more. Because what I thought was interesting is that it's called Anna, Who They Pulled Out of the River, and you are still filming it, right?
Yeah.
And even a year ago, I remember you in an email, you had told me that you were kind of filming it episodically, right? And like, and even though ultimately it's going to be a full feature film, but you were doing it in sections, right? And you're still doing that. I thought it was interesting you filmed it in Tijuana, and I was wondering why Tijuana and not like somewhere in the U.S. Or is the part of the story of the movie, you know, has to take place in Tijuana? Like, what was the reasoning behind that?
I love the city, and it's all there. Like it's ready, like it's like a ready made. Like I don't have to do much.
What do you mean by that?
Location wise and things like that.
Yeah. But what about it made it feel that way?
For people who haven't been, you know, not like the third world aspect of it. We don't show like the movie isn't like a lot of like grime and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But a lot of like, you know, the rattier and sort of like pirate architecture that's there.
Yeah.
The things that you don't see in the U.S., you know, like these like ridiculous inclines, these, you know, abandoned buildings that you can use for free. Basically, you know, there's so much that we've done over there that I couldn't pull off here without cash and permission, paperwork.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't it like how you can just, it's easier if you go somewhere else than in our own country to film something.
Yeah. And then I'm not, you know, I'm not on like the main drag. Not on Revolución and not on like these like landmarks. There's no real like landmarks in the movie.
Right.
It's all like the suburbs. So, I mean, if I had shot in like these like well-known places, then I probably would need permits and things like that. But we're out in like the suburbs, and that's more like interesting to me. It's like, it's where the stuff gets, because again, this is my opinion, but you know, kind of the stuff in the center of town, like the big, really hip, popular stuff is kind of just like, it's American.
It really
you know?
Is.
It's not, it's not, doesn't feel, I mean, I'll go and I'll have like a really good burger and a good beer for cheap. And I like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it's, you know,
right,
poetic or anything really special. But you get out into the suburbs, you know, and you don't even have to, I mean, we go with a plan. We have our shot list, but always like while we're there, something is going on that is cooler than what I wrote. You know, like little yeah. like I don't know where you know a group of you know school kids just got out of class and they're like whacking each other, fighting with like 12-foot long like bamboo canes.
Yeah,
you know they go by. Or, you know, some like 5-year-old kid goes like galloping on a horse on like asphalt road, you know, just random stuff. It's fun. It's a lot funner than to shoot here.
It seems also, I was like looking at clips that you've had so far of it, and it seems very spontaneous, the whole experience too, of you filming, like, mm-hmm. like you have your actors in the movie, but it seems very like, you guys are going with the flow of like whatever the environment gives you. It's in the movie with like the scene.
Yeah, you gotta. You know, if you get that, then you yeah. definitely use it. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those little like gifts. Yeah, we try to set up everything beforehand, but we've gotten lucky with a lot of like weird random stuff that just happens.
Have you had any trouble like with like any locals or like people being upset?
No, it's great because like it's the opposite. Like. You know, okay, so we want to do a restaurant scene and there's this little like diner that I like and I just talked to the guy and, you know, there's no like paperwork. There's no anything. They're just like, can we do it? Okay.
Yeah.
yeah. Or we're doing something out on the street
yeah.
and we're trying to get this shot. So one of the things about the movie is there's no men in this world, in this yeah. whole world. And it's not explained. It's just in this universe, like men don't exist and you never see any men in the whole movie. And that's kind of I took that. I love the Hernandez brothers mm-hmm. Sort of comics and the universe that they have. Men in that world, but it's definitely like female centric. So I thought it'd be interesting. I didn't know what would happen, but I thought it'd be interesting to take it, try to crank it up a little bit, and just put like no guys and not like anti guys.
Yeah.
Like this is the country where no, not like an Amazon sort of thing. There's no guys. So that's been kind of hard sometimes when you're – because you can't really – without permits or cash. You can't say, all right, no guys can pass like yeah. on this part of the street. But, you know, random people, you know, like ladies selling corn or trying to do something. Are you guys trying to shoot? Are you guys trying to shoot? Are these guys – hold on. They're trying to shoot a movie here. Just wait. Wait. Don't cross.
Yeah, you know? So like even the locals are just helping you out.
Yeah, they're like AD, assistant directors,
yeah.
PAs themselves just – people I've never met before. One time there's a lot of murder in the movie
mm-hmm.
and I won't be giving too much away, but there's a murder scene. A truck has run over this gal and we set it up on this hill like to look like this truck came down and crashed and ran this woman over, and the actress is down there and we've got some little fake smoke going and we're shooting, and then all these, again, we can't stop traffic. So these cars are like coming by and they see this woman that looks like she's dead. it was great because half of the cars we'd see it in slow motion. They'd slow down, they'd look at the woman, see she's dead, and then speed up and leave.
Right, like I don't want anything.
Yeah.
They don't want anything to do with it.
They want to see if she was okay or anything. And then the other half would stop and like people were like getting out of their cars like, what's going on? Is she okay? And then we'd have to, you know, we're over here with the camera. We're filming. It's okay. Oh, you son of a bitch. All right. But the funniest ones are the people that said, nope, keep going.
Yeah.
no trouble. We for a different project.
Yeah.
I'm working on a pilot for another sort of story that I want to do based on this guy named Diana. They call mm-hmm. her Diana the Huntress. She was a. They never caught her, but she supposedly this woman was going around Ciudad Juarez mm-hmm. killing bus drivers.
Oh, interesting.
And it's like revenge for all yeah. the violence against women in the city.
Oh, wow.
And so we're shooting all these like pyrotechnics. My producer got like these actual pyrotechnic guys wow. to steal the rig from whatever show they're working on.
Yeah, yeah.
And this thing blows like, you know, 30-foot plumes of fire. And I was like, all right, we need an empty road where we can shoot and pyrotechnics and, you know, not get in trouble. All right, we could do that. He got us this location that's basically like a dump. It's like it's behind these new track homes. But it's where like everyone goes to just like dump their trash and lots of toilet seats and stuff. But no one really bothered us. A couple times cops drove by and we're setting this thing off.
Yeah.
And we're crashing cars.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a shitty Ford Ranger and we've been using that as a stunt car and then crashing it, actually crashing it. And the cops come by and they go, good night. They don't even say anything.
Yeah. Oh, just another day.
But that's, you know, that's luck. And, you know, if we had tried that in the middle of the city, that would have been different.
So, without giving too much away for this movie, give me the gist of what kind of movie this is going to be, and like not a synopsis, but a brief little teaser about what it is.
Peter Travers calls it a virtual romp, a tour de force. So it starts off with without giving it away. It starts off sort of like the story of Moses.
Mm-hmm, right.
Woman abandons puts her child in like a little raft and sends her down across the Tijuana River into Tijuana. Mm-hmm. And then we jump 20 or so years into the future, and this gal's grown up, and she's sort of like this dynamic, you know, life force sort of character, you know, that character. And then her mother comes back. She reveals herself sort of into her life by murdering all of her friends, like one by one.
Oh, interesting.
And it sort of like spirals down into
It's kind of a thriller a little bit too, then.
It's kind of, I don't know what it is. I can't say I've been successful in it, but sometimes I try to do the opposite. And so like things that should be like thrilling, I try to make them boring, shoot it as like,
yeah,
anticlimactic. It doesn't always work. Like Sin Eater, the first version that I did of it, I had this idea in my head, this stubborn idea, like I want to do a movie with no establishing shots. Like, you know, I don't want these, you know, I get it, establishing shots. No establishing shots. And then I shot it and I was like, oh, I should have put some establishing shots. No one knows what this is. But I'm definitely trying to do sort of opposite thing. They don't always work. But yes, I guess the long way around the question, sort of a thriller.
And it looks like you're shooting it in black and white, is what it is. And what's your reasoning for that? Like, what do you just like that old feeling to it?
Yeah, a couple things. Money and also...
of course, right.
Yeah, but also style. Like, I'd wanted to... Well, it's really style, but then money is a huge part because then it's kind of technical.
Yeah.
Because style-wise, I wanted black and white because... I mean, it's kind of a cheat.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that you shoot and it's kind of boring. I mean, it's not boring, but like you put it in black and white and something happens.
Yeah.
You know, I like that fantasy world. I think I read somewhere like Roger Ebert like really described it well. I think said what I was thinking and I didn't know what I was thinking. Or he said something like, when you watch these old movies, you know, people are nostalgic for old-time movies.
Yeah.
It's not just that they're old movies and it's nostalgic. You're seeing it. It's grainy. It's black and white. That actually helps you imagine this. It puts you in this fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of new stuff. I don't hate, you know, I'm not like, I hate all this new digital stuff. But some of this stuff, like the TVs you see set up at like Costco and stuff, when these ultra, I don't know what TVs they are,
yeah,
you see everything. I guess in a way it's another fantasy world, but it's too real for me.
Too real.
It doesn't, yeah. But I mean, I like some of the new stuff, but anyways, yeah, black and white puts you in that other world. That said, though, you can shoot, which I've done before, you shoot color,
mm-hmm,
and then you desaturate it and make it black and white. Mm-hmm. And that's handy because you have more film stocks to choose from. You got like 50, 200, 250, and 500. But if you go straight black and white and just shoot this cheap black and white stock that Kodak has, is like half the price.
Yeah. So. Well, and I think the other cool thing is too, because I don't think it's really part. I mean, other than it is kind of part of the story that she goes down the Tijuana River and she grows up in Tijuana, mm-hmm, the character. But I mean, when you put it in black and white, you don't see the color. It could be any town, like really.
Yeah.
They, right. So I feel like.
Yeah. We never named the city too. Mm-hmm. That was another.
Yeah.
This is good. You're digging. Because I haven't talked about the movie in a while, so all the talking points are like coming back to me. Did I mention this?
Yeah, yeah.
We never say Tijuana in the movie. So there's no like real landmarks. There's no Tijuana. No one mentions it. It's intended to be like this universal.
It could be any town, any town in this world. Like, but this, and it's not even important where the town is. What important is the story.
Yeah.
How far along now are you in the process of filming the movie?
I was pretty close to done, and then now I'm like halfway, to be honest, because I got picky. And then now I have to change too. I have to update the website and the marketing and stuff for it because, I had intended for it to be single take. I like that. I still only shoot like 2-3 takes tops.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought again, another, like, let's crank it up and see what this does. Sort of
yeah.
thing, like with the no man sort of thing was, let's do single takes,
mm-hmm.
you know, real wild, and it'll be cheap and it'll be rough. And I did that. Then I guess film movies are, I don't know if they're distinct from other art in that, you know, because they're made up of so many little pieces
mm-hmm.
to make the whole. I did that single take style technique, but then, you know, half of what I shot looked like a painting.
Yeah.
Like it looked really, like, came out really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then, but which was good, but then what that did was it sort of set the bar like up here, and then when you put like the rough stuff next to it, it looks like you did a shitty job, or like yeah. you couldn't pull it off,
yeah,
or you said whatever is good enough,
yeah,
you know, whereas if the whole thing had been, you know, had looked like that rough stuff, it would have all looked like that cohesive
mm-hmm.
like that's the style. This was all single takes, so you know, so shooting in film, you know, it's months. You know, when you have cash, it is like it's within days. You yeah. know, like you send your person.
Yeah.
Like I'm up at the labs, and there's always like, you know, some like cute French or Russian girl that they've hired to
yeah.
like, drop off the film and pick it up, and you get it like the next day.
Yeah.
Low budget for me. You know, it's usually weeks, if not months, that I shoot something, and then I get it back, and then I get it scanned, and then I can see it. So I've gotten everything back, and I'm shooting like a third, if mm-hmm. not half of it, over again,
mm-hmm.
just because half of what I have is like up here,
yeah.
and the other half looks like a completely different movie.
Now you like the part that you filmed that you felt that yeah. you filmed better.
Yeah, like
now you want the whole film to look like that,
yeah.
and so now you're kind of going back and making sure that's how it matches up.
Yeah,
and the actors for this film, like, where did you get the actors, or you know, do you know them personally? And
they're mostly non actors. There's a couple that I do know, but most of like the Mexican ones
mm-hmm.
are non actors, or you know, and that's not insulting them, like they don't know how to act.
Right.
They're not like professional actors,
right.
but or if not, they're starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great. They're really. It took me actually four. I had to cast the lead four times to find the right person.
Really.
And I think that goes back to like that same sort of, you know, you're asking like when did I know I wanted to do film? It was like, you know, it's a lot of work to recast, especially when I've shot stuff.
Yeah.
That I can use with this actress. I've put in all this time and energy. And then just realize, like, no, it's not going to work. I have to recast.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't hesitate. You know, you realize, okay, this is what I want to do and not just do a half-ass. Yeah, it took us we had to cast the role four times for different reasons. I don't speak ill of the dead. but now the gal that we've had, she's great. Sonia Quevedo, she's been our Anna for the last like year and a half, 2 years, whatever it's been.
Yeah.
But, and they're so, you know, they're really patient with me too, because, you know, movies shouldn't take this long, but
right,
they understand,
right,
you know, like the money aspect, like the little girl that I use.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had to really, you know, cross my fingers, pray and do tricks with lighting and stuff and shots, because her face has changed. Like, I mean,
right,
she's a completely different size. You yeah. put her in her original wardrobe. She's at that age where you grow real fast.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like within a year, you've grown three different yeah. sizes or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But you get a really cool energy with a lot of people that aren't, I don't know, it sounds like I'm saying something bad, that aren't professional actors. But the people that I've cast, I love them, and they're working really, I think the part that what they bring really to the roles that they're in is like energy
mm-hmm.
and enthusiasm. Cause even if they're not like professional, they're game. And that's what they really, that's what's really made the movie so good, I think, or what I've shot so good, is that they're game for stuff.
Well, so now whenever you do finish the film, what's your next step? Well, I mean, it sounds like I know you say now you're like, now you're like halfway through, but it sounds like you now know more what you want. Mm-hmm. So it also sounds like it's probably the next few months, at least, of filming, isn't going to be as difficult as it probably was the first time around, because you know exactly what you want and you know exactly, you still have the same people you're working with.
I feel like
with.
I have a little bit of a better grip on, aim.
Yeah. And
vision, artistic vision.
Yeah. So what's your plan? Like, once you're done with the film, like, where do you want to show it? Like, what are your what's your dream, you know, or hopes? Like, are you already pitching the idea, like, hey, I'm doing this film?
No, I mean, I'm working less ass backwards than before, but still working semi ass backwards in that, I'm really focused on the production of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, in real life, you would have someone helping you and you'd be like focusing also already on like distribution from the get go, like from when you write the script. And it's in my, you know, I have it in my mind, but it's not, you know. Yeah, the goal is, the dream goal would be distribution.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as, you know, when I finish it, I'd go the standard route, like submit to big film festivals,
see
where that goes, and then try to get it seen. That's the goal. Just get it out and get it seen. And then basically, I guess, learn about distribution or find someone who knows. This is all just like learning from me. I didn't go to film school. So Google.
Yeah.
Lots of YouTube, reading and trying to just like learn from people like that have done it before, distribution wise, things like that.
So aside from the film the big project that you're working on now, you mentioned you were filming something like a pilot of some sorts. Mm-hmm. In addition, is there any other type of work you're doing on the side or simultaneously, like, or is just really all your efforts and focus have been really on this film?
I sound like the bad guy. Like, I am a little bit all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. It the main, this is like Star Trek, like all power towards.
Yeah.
auxiliary power is mostly going towards this film.
Yeah.
And then little things like pop up.
Yeah.
That I can, guess I'm a little bit distracted. They keep me sort of engaged.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, it's things that don't take away from the energy from the other movie, but that I can work on anyways. At work, now for the last 2 years, I teach filmmaking to adults with disabilities.
Okay.
And we're working on a short now that's like a horror movie.
That's cool.
Spearheading that production.
Yeah.
I was in Iceland last month or a month or two ago. And while I was there, I went with my kids. And then... while I was there, I wanted to shoot a short because I was there.
Yeah.
Like, I realized, like, on other vacations that I've gone on, while I was there, I was like, I should have brought a camera and, like, done something. Because you get, like, or at least in my head, I've got this built-in production value thing. It's like shooting on location,
Yeah.
Wherever you are.
Yeah.
So I designed this little, like, really small, it was supposed to be shot in one day.
Yeah.
A short film with no crew, with just myself.
Yeah.
And it sort of exploded into 4 days of shooting, a lot bigger than it got. But there's that project. There's the pilot that I'm shooting.
Yeah.
Tijuana is getting really big now.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I don't.
It's having a little bit of resurgence, isn't it? A little bit, like lately?
Yeah, we got like Narcos, and the people that did Narcos have got a new show coming up,
right? The Mexico version of it, like, it's from what I understand.
Yeah, and then there's another one. There's another one about like the murder of a journalist, it might have been about the assassination attempt. Did they kill the Mexican president again?
Yeah,
I sound like I don't know anything. Something like this guy. There's a lot of stuff going on in TJ right now. So my pilot is sort of trying to get into that
Well, and so Do you think you'll ever go back to being with, you know, making traditional visual artwork like photographs and art films and stuff? Like, do you think you ever go back to that world of like showing in a museum, showing in an art gallery?
Never.
No, you think moving forward, it seems to be that.
Yeah, I dropped out of sort of art and the whole art scene too.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like Rodney Dangerfield said something like about, because he quit before Rodney Dangerfield got big.
Yeah.
He was a comedian for a long time.
Yeah.
Never got anywhere. And then he quit. And then he came back and he had really refined his shtick.
Right. Yeah.
But he's got a bit where he's like, yeah, I quit, but it was so bad. I was the only person that knew I quit.
Yeah.
It's like that. I'm out.
Yeah.
And it's because, yeah, I just want to do movies. It's the only thing that really seems worth my time to me that I really want to do.
And yeah.
There's certain things that I like about movies too. You know, not doing like short, weird art films.
Yeah.
People used to ask me, you know, what I do. I was like, well, I make short, weird movies, aiming towards making big, weird movies. Something that I like, having just like a little bit of taste beyond short, weird art movies, is that I really like the business aspect of it, in that maybe it's just me as an artist, but I think other people kind of have run into the same thing, is that in like the art world, there's a lot of like, you know, touchy feely sensitive stuff when it comes to money, you know, whether when you want to ask an institution for money for this, you know, like I've shown, you know, like a lot of places, and I mean, I got paid maybe like a couple times.
Right.
You know, there's no, I think I got a commission once.
Right. And most of the time, like if you really want to make money, you have to like show in galleries and then have your stuff bought out of a gallery.
Yeah.
But that doesn't exist very much in San Diego.
To make money, you have to be successful.
Yeah.
but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It, when you even asking for money,
yeah,
it's a touchy subject.
Right.
You know, like I'd get contacted by an institution and say, oh, wait, we want to show, we saw your stuff, we'd like to show it. And I mean, you feel good. You're like, hell yeah, hey,
yeah.
I want to show it. And then you're like, yeah, can I get some money out of it?
Right.
Like, whoa.
Right.
Well, it's not just like,
we'll pay for the shipping, but we won't pay for, you know, like the.
Yeah. And then it also feels like it's not just like a simple, like, no, I'm sorry, there's no budget for that. It's always like, no, there's no, like, why did you ask?
Like, yeah.
There's this, like, as an artist, I mean, as an unsuccessful artist, I guess as it was, as a yet successful artist, it always felt kind of like, oh, I want to ask for some money, but I feel like if I ask for money, they're going to put me on some sort of like blacklist. Like, this fucker, he asked for, don't work with this guy because he asks for money.
Do you think that's just in San Diego, or do you think that's a plan?
I mean, because you must have shown
in LA,
other
right?
Places, but I'm just, yeah. But I was always just happy to be, same thing. I was happy to be showing. Actually, the stuff that I did in LA, like I got money for that stuff.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if it's a San Diego thing, maybe because it's smaller.
I was lucky to get, I was invited to be a part of a couple shows and collaborative shows and a project. There's always cash behind that.
Yeah.
So maybe it is just San Diego, but
yeah,
I never got successful enough to know.
Right. Well, and it's a smaller art community too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that about film. I don't think that there's, especially for like, so again, like me,
yeah,
yet successful person, I don't
right.
think there's more money floating around. I just feel that it's a lot less feelings involved.
Yeah.
Which I like. So it's like, I'm doing this thing.
Yeah.
I need this money.
Yeah.
No. All right, cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's straight. No,
it's
one's
straightforward.
I don't feel bad asking for the money.
Right.
And when you say no, I don't feel bad either.
And they don't make you feel bad for asking
because
it's like, no, you should be asking me. I think the answer is no, but good for you for asking.
Yeah. Maybe I'll backtrack, you know, 15, 20 years from now or something. But yeah, I would love to be in Hollywood and was like, listen, we need this much money for this. That's not going to exist in 20 years, you know, but that idea of like.
Well, it's funny, you know, you mentioned this, I was just listening to a podcast and Ice Cube was in it and someone, you know, and he was in the music industry and the movie industry, right? And they asked him, do you like doing movies more or albums more? And he says, well, I like making music more, but the thing is that I like doing the films lately more because I guaranteed get paid. And he was saying that the music industry, they're really iffy about money.
Yeah.
But for some reason, in his experience, movies, it's like the check is guaranteed coming in the mail. You know, they straight out from the very beginning are very clear with you. You're getting X amount of dollars and that's it. And I'm getting it. And your check is definitely clearing every single time.
Yeah.
Whereas like the music industry was very much like, well, why don't we just do this and we'll talk about it later. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it seems to be kind of the same thing that you're saying. It's like it's straightforward. You like it. And you're still making art in some way or another. It's just in the form of full feature films. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I always ask this to my guests towards the end of our conversations, but what do you hope to see yourself, you know, 5-10 years from now, aside from showing the film, obviously?
Yeah. I would like to be so successful that I have a cowboy boot shaped pool in my house. I don't care if it's a crappy house. But you know what? But I'll be so like tight with money and stuff that I'll dig the pool myself. But I want that. I want to make movies and I just want to make movies.
Yeah.
I have like a lot of other, you know, a couple of scripts that I've written that I'm getting a little bit better at like pulling the reins and not starting on stuff and not dividing my time more. But I have two more feature scripts written and just, you know, always writing ideas.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to keep, I'd like to finish this.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to keep working.
Yeah. Well, it's also good to hear that you're still writing, right? Like that was originally what you loved to do. And you still always have ideas and you're still writing.
Yeah. I'd like to, you know, keep writing, you know, writing my own stuff that I direct. I think that I don't have tons of experience, but I've written everything that I've made so far.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like, I think probably like any artist, you know, I like the power, like the autonomy, like the, you know, this is mine all the way. And then if I want to change it, I don't want to change it. But, there's a lot of books that I'd like to, that I like to film too, and not just write my own stuff. My dream is, you know, my favorite book is called Tiger Tiger, mm-hmm. or Stars My Destination. And last I heard that they're finally making it, but it's kind of one of those cursed movies, like mm-hmm. for like 20, 30 years or something, like people have signed up and then doesn't get made.
Yeah.
So I don't know if God loves me, he'll like, this will fall through and then it'll just be waiting there for me to pick it up in like 5 years or something.
Yeah,
I'd love to do stuff that I didn't write too.
Well, thanks for coming on, man. I'm glad we finally got to meet and we finally got to do the podcast.
Yeah. Really, it's like the movie, like it has to, what should take a month take
a year. Yeah, for sure. And you know, and the more I keep doing this podcasty stuff, that seems to be the story where like the person I really want to get on, and finally 2 years later I get him. It's like, oh, thank God, it's worth the wait.
Yeah, that's my strategy. I made you wait for it.
All right, man. Well, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks. Thank you.
All right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Omar for coming on. To learn more about the film he is working on and his other projects, visit his production studio website at standardfantastic.com. You can also check out photos of Omar and him on set of his film, Anna, Who They Pulled Out of the River, on the podcast website at artscenepc.com. Also, be sure to leave a comment or a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Till next time, everyone.